Hold on tight. This is the Generic Live Show.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you. It is the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Thanks for joining us here on GLS. It's a pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us. Whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive, live on twitch.tv/TheChefWonder, youtube.com/genericliveshow. Though on the Generic Live Show YouTube page, I do apologize. It is legitimately for the live listeners on YouTube. It is just a static picture. I don't know what is going on, but hopefully that can be fixed at some point in the future. I have an idea on why it has broken, but we're just gonna push on through. That's right. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you. We went here last week. Woo, Dale bombed his final, and it's exciting stuff. Okay, bit of personal life to begin the show. And because I'm on a roll from the pre-show, if you watched the live broadcast on Twitch and the later transferred broadcast on YouTube by the seams of things, it went well. I'm just a little bit more anxious than ever before to kind of foresee the result of my final ever final, and I wasn't expecting it to pan out the way that it did. So, and whether I'm happy that it panned out the way it did or not is a completely different story. So there you go. So, but we're here, we're doing a Generic Live Show. We'll wait and see how that kind of pans out for that. In the meantime, though, most of this week's stories are 2 weeks old, but that's okay because I think this week's show is so large and so encompassing, it's going to cover quite a lot of different perspectives. If you are listening to this live or live, it is currently 9:04 PM Australian Eastern Standard Time Zone, just after 7:04 AM Eastern Time, Florida time, and there you go. It is exciting. It is distracting though, having two streams up at the same time. But I'll push on. So, the United Kingdom had an election, and it is quite a doozy, and let me tell you, it's definitely something that is probably going to impact the rest of what's to come up in the upcoming couple of months here as we head towards sort of Brexit time and kind of world events that are happening in and around. So it's definitely something to take notice of. British Prime Minister Theresa May called a general election in April, 3 years before it was required by UK electoral law, saying that she wanted to increase an increased majority to, quote, strengthen her hand, unquote, in Brexit talks. It appears that gamble has failed. The exit poll conducted for the main UK broadcasters is predicting that her Conservative Party has lost its parliamentary majority. Such a result would be a major upset. Overall, the Conservative Party scored 42.5% of the vote. The UK Labour Party has scored a 40%. The Liberal Democratic Party has scored 7.4%. The SNP, the Scotland National Party, scored 3%, while others parties slash international parties scored little over 7%. And what's interesting about that result is that I think has got to be the highest independent vote there has been in quite some time when it comes to the UK elections. So that is where that is coming from. Changing seats, the Labour Party has picked up 32 seats. They were the big winner, 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 chicken dinner. That's not the right noise. That's not the right noise either. No, that's not either. No, well, okay, that's kind of like a bell, I suppose. Why not? Why not? They picked up 32 seats. The Liberal Democrats picked up three. The SF picked up two. The DUP picked up two. The PC picked up one. The Personal Computer picked up one. The UUP lost two seats. The SDLP lost three seats, rather. Not two seats, three seats. The Conservative Party lost 13, rather, and SNP lost 19 seats. The Scotland National Party lost 19 seats. Oof, ouch. That is rough on their behalf. But anyway, so, and it was a rough election all around, if you believe everything that everyone has said, pundits has said about this election. It has been one of the toughest fought out battles of all time. But you look at the world events that have happened over the last several months, and it's kind of impressive to see how this happened. I mean, here in this country, we're kind of used to a hung parliament, but in places like the United Kingdom, where they're used to a sense of decorum and a sense of placency, that is huge for them. That really is huge for them. So, but the p a p they Vox.com is what I was meant to, that what I'm trying to say there, wrote a piece saying the shocking UK election results explained, and this piece goes in very lengthy details. So, and I think it's very much worth a read to those people who are political kind of junkies like me, and you listen to the first hour of this program, and it's an information heavy first half. So, yeah, why not? We're gonna go through this. When projection first came out showing Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May losing control of Parliament on Thursday night, the surprise at the watch party that this person attended in Central London was palpable. People wandered around the basement of a fancy building at a London School of Economics, staring at television, blaring the BBC, with mouths open in either eradication or despair, depending on which they supported. Elation, rather. The full results on Friday morning show that shock was entirely warranted. May's Tories, that's shorthand speak for Conservative parties, by the way, if anyone wanted to know what that meant, lost 12 seats in Parliament. Then 2 months ago, they reasonably hoped to nearly gain 100. They're still the largest parties, though, winning 318 seats out of a total 60, but no longer hold a majority. In the British system, in this kind of situation where no party controls most of the parliament, it's called a hung parliament. Typically, it means that the largest party keeps control of the government, but they can't pass any major laws. A big deal when she's trying to work out Brexit and how Brexit's going to going to take place and how that's going to necessarily work in a sense. And that's definitely worth noting, is you've got Brexit coming up, and I don't understand, they don't understand how they're going to get that done now, because it's going to put that at jeopardy if they can't get any major laws through the system. So as May is likely to become Prime Minister, what they don't mention in this article though is that they have to technically contact the Queen, and the Queen has to decide whether she can remain Prime Minister or not, depending on how the Queen feels. Of course, the Queen should, 99 times out of 100, decide that, yeah, the same person's going to remain Prime Minister because, well, we don't want the disruption of power to kind of happen. They definitely don't want that to take place, definitely. And meanwhile, the opposition Labour Party, led by left-wing firebrand Jeremy Corbyn, surged gaining 29 seats in the parliament. And if the Labour Party wasn't willing enough to gain seats in this manner, they were likely to become a party that is obsolete. They were planning to become, well, not planning to become, they would plan to become, the people would decide that they would become an obsolete political party. And it's good in 2017, it's good that a political party can kind of raise from the quote unquote dead, if you will, and raise up and surge up. But what I am trying to glean from all of this is people are saying that that is a good thing. Cast your minds back to 2016, then talk to me. But okay, different, because ideologically it was a little different then because of the values that the person held, but it was still, and I said this back then, probably on this very broadcast, if not in other mediums, it was definitely an uprising, and the uprising worked. It was just a shame that the majority of people disagreed with the movement, and that is not the case in this situation, I'm aware, but it is still kind of an uprising as it seems. I know I'm going off on a lot of different tangents here, so I'll try and keep it as to a minimum. So what do the results mean? So the full significance of the results, while stunning, you need to understand a little bit about how the British system works. It's similar if anyone's familiar with how the system works here in Australia. It's kind of that similar sort of situation. You kind of have that same sort of situation of you vote for MPs, and the MPs serve the fine people of the country. I don't know, I was trying to think of the next word there to go in that sentence. And in terms of a hung parliament, what happens in a hung parliament, which we've seen in this country on more than one occasion, I may add, it seems that political parties try and form, not necessarily in the British system, but definitely here in Australia, form a kind of two-party preferred sort of basis. And it is they're trying to form a majority, but in this election case, they are not able to form a majority at all. The election was a conservative gamble that backfired badly. Like I said, the deep irony of the results and the key reason why the conservatives are furious at Theresa May is that the devastating election they didn't have happened. Huh? In fact, it wasn't supposed to be in the British election until 2020. They called an early election on April 18th, something PMs do in parliamentary systems because she had a good reason and she thought she would win by a massive margin. Quote, I concluded that the only way to guarantee certainty and security for years ahead is to hold this election, she said in a televised statement explaining her decision. Division in Parliament will risk our ability to make successful Brexit. So that is what Theresa May believes. The gamble backfired, so there you go. The margin is like 10.1 now, as opposed to what it used to be. I wonder what it used to be. They don't say that here. But the biggest impact will be on Brexit, with consequences that affects millions of lives. Normally, British elections don't have major stakes for the rest of the world, but this one's different, Brexit being the most obvious reason. No more than 100,000 people to be admitted to Britain per year. For this to happen, they need to end the free flow of people into the EU and Britain, certainly mandated by EU law. 3 million EU citizens currently live in the UK. 250,000 EU citizens moved to the UK alone last year. Oof. Wow, there you go. Jeepers. The problem, though, is that the EU was unlikely to agree to this and continue to allow UK access to the EU's common market, which grants all the EU countries privileged trade status with each other. The UK depends on EU for trade. About 44% of exports go to the rest of Europe. Wow. In that scenario, it's called a hard Brexit. Will happen automatically unless the EU and the UK come to softer terms. Excuse me. Yeah, I know. Riveting stuff. Quote, Theresa May said she wanted a strong majority for Britain's exit from the EU, but she can't get that, German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel said in a Friday morning statement. The message of this election is have fair decisions with the EU and think about whether it's actually good for Britain to leave the EU in this way. Whew, yeah, Britain not really having a fun time at the moment, let me tell you. Yeah, it's... June has been a rough month. Oh, God. By gosh. By golly gosh. Yeah, but all that joking voice aside, two attacks and now a hung parliament? Seriously, you have to ask yourself, what is next for the UK? Like, is there anything left for the UK at this point? I don't know. It is really hard to tell if there is anything left for the UK to experience over the next couple of months as we head towards September, which apparently is when Brexit is slated to happen. And it's certainly the right people, unfortunately, are in power for that to happen. So tune in right here, Generic Live Show. We've got you covered all Brexit long. If that makes sense. I don't know what that's meant to mean. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, broadcasting live, you can see my face on Twitch, twitch.tv/TheChefWonder. Probably going to be moving over to a GLS dedicated account here soon. As we continue, we ask the important questions here on the Generic Live Show, and we've got an important one for you coming up right after this. It's the Generic Live Show. Only the important, hard-hitting questions here on GLS. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you. We're doing it for Geek.io as or her always. Thanks for joining us. It's 9:21. Whether we're waking you up or putting you to sleep, this is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us. It's Dale Campbell here. We're doing it for Geek.io as per always. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It is certainly good to be here. It's your Sunday night dance party. Woo! Yes. Oh, yeah. Getting it up and moving, or putting you to sleep with Dance Hits USA. I don't know what that's meant to mean. All right, I don't know what any of this is meant to mean. You know what I do mean, or do I know what it means? I don't know what that's. I'm just saying words now. Words, English, hard, difficult. A cover girl, you know, a cover girl. Brand, what does the makeup? They do the makeup. They do the makeup. I said do. A cover girl, the makeup brand, they ask you, what is wrong with applying makeup in public? Every morning, in cities around the world, you'll find a woman applying makeup on public transport during her daily commute. It's a regular habit for millions of women. It's even backed by studies that say that good grooming, including wearing makeup, can boost your pay packet and chances of getting promoted. In 2017, yes, that is still a thing, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, even for men, you know, men wear makeup too. Real men eat quiche and wear makeup. Is that what we're going with? Is that what we're really going for here? But public peening has peeved off some people. Whoa. So much so that public transportation bodies in major metropolitan cities have signs asking women to not apply makeup on trains or buses. Clipping, priming, everyone wants to look their best, but it's a subway car, not a restroom. An advertisement from New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority, accompanied by an image of a man clipping his nails and a woman brushing her hair. Now, high street beauty brand CoverGirl is hitting back. Oh, CoverGirl with hard-hitting journalism. Much like this show. We are the CoverGirls of news programs. Yes. Yes. Yes, we are. You know that's right. hitting back. We are the CoverGirl of news programs. That's too good. At what they call makeup shaming, after a study they conducted found that more than half women feel uncomfortable doing their makeup in public. This week, they launched a new campaign called Project PDA, which stands for Public Displays of Application. Can we play this ad? It's a minute 45.
I saw this sign and wondered, what's wrong with applying your makeup in public? We saw this sign and wondered, what's wrong with applying your makeup in public? And is this just an ad on the subway or a sign of something bigger? So we conducted a survey with over 1,500 women around the country, and more than half stated that they would feel uncomfortable doing their makeup in public.
People think you're vain.
Whatever.
People look at you like side-eyed.
Judging.
People were stopped and staring at me like I was a circus clown, and it was literally just me baking my face.
No, I'll do it anywhere because I have to.
Yep.
But then, like, you people, like, look at you.
It caught me off guard. I was so confused as to why she felt so offended for something that is on my face.
I had to do my makeup in a rush inside of a taxi, and the taxi driver seemed rather bothered. He proceeded to ask me if I could please put away the makeup products that I was using.
There are these messages telling women what to do and what not to do.
I think that is completely ridiculous. How can you compare applying makeup to toenail clipping?
At CoverGirl, we believe that no one should tell you how, when, or where you make up. It's up to you. So we put up mirrors all over New York City and brought 500 women together to look the stigma in the eye. Because makeup is nothing to be ashamed of.
Makeup is an extension of who you are.
I personally view it as doing artwork in public.
So lip out loud, blush boldly, cat eye with confidence. Don't shy away from a little PDA. Public display of application, that is.
Aww. Yeah, see, I don't know how I feel about... Oh, what is that image? Oh, okay. Ooh, right. Ugh, I just saw an image that I don't think I really wanted to see. Anywho, as a part of tonight's dinner, proudly brought you by that picture that no one can see. Alright, as a part of the PDA campaign, CoverGirl put up mirrors all across New York City and invited 500 women to apply their makeup. This is all the ad that is saying. When we saw the sign on New York subway system and wondered, what is wrong with applying makeup in public? Yeah. And it's just an ad campaign for random windows popping up in the middle of, there you go. And it's just an ad on the subway or a sign that's bigger, the ad asks. There are messages telling women what to do and what not to do. At CoverGirl, we believe no one should tell you how or when, where to apply their makeup. It's up to you. Because makeup is nothing to be ashamed of. Ah, yes. As we continue, here on the Generic Live Show, where we are the cover girls. We are the cover girl of new shows is pretty good. I'm not even gonna lie. That is a pretty accurate description of this show. We are the high brand makeup of these shows. And as we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, here at home, there was a little bit of a mishap, and you might not know about it. We'll tell you more as we continue here on the Generic Live Show. This story might actually scare you. So we do apologize for that in advance. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. I'm going to put a fresh face on and it's in public. Oh my gosh. Thanks for joining us. It's 9:31. Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you, doing it for Geek.io as per always. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's a pleasure to be here as per always. Now, there was a little... Ooh. It's a... When that beat drops, yo. When events happen here locally, we try and bring them to you, and things hit hard when they hit home, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's meant to mean. A former terrorist with a long record of violence took a sex worker in a suburban Australian apartment building on Monday.
Is it terrorism?
Oh, God.
A much repeated question that's asked by government agencies in wake of an attack. And while it seems simple at first, making...
Oop. Hello.
A call can be a struggle.
The deadly terror attack.
Terror attack.
Terror.
In 2015, there were almost 15,000 acts of terror in the world. The problem is that there's no internationally recognized definition for terrorism. The UN has been debating it for years. The FBI defined terrorism as the unlawful use of force or violence against persons or property to intimidate or coerce a government, the civilian population, or any segment thereof in furtherance of political or social objectives. So, essentially, it comes down to motive. Was there a political or ideological agenda behind the attack? Take this. In March 2017, Khalid Massoud ran over civilians on Westminster Bridge and stabbed a police officer in the Palace of Westminster. He killed four and was shot dead by police officers. It was the worst attack in London for more than a decade. It was labeled terrorism. In 2012, 20-year-old Adam Lanza shot and killed 27 people in the now infamous Sandy Hook massacre before turning the gun on himself. He was a recluse, obsessed with school shootings, but it wasn't called terrorism because he had no known ideological intent. The reality is that in some of these cases, it's less clear-cut. But sometimes it can be used out of bias.
There is a danger that we only use the word terrorism to refer to a particular racial profile of perpetrator.
In June 2015, 9 people were killed in Charleston, South Carolina, when Dylann Roof opened fire in one of the oldest African-American churches in the United States. He was later found to be a white supremacist. But despite multiple calls for his crime to be considered an act of terror, Roof was convicted for hate crimes and murder charges, not terrorism.
The Charleston example is a really important one to really conceptualize exactly how and why terrorism is essentially contested. And in this case, we get to the heart of the debate. Sometimes terrorism is not.
Okay. And apologies, there seems to be a problem with that video. It just randomly cut off in the middle there. But that video kind of describes a kind of terrorism sort of situation, if that, you know, that kind of what is terrorism. This event that is depicted here is known as a terrorism sort of event, but whereas times where there are mass shootings, that's not defined as terrorism. That's the point of that video. Do we have that audio coming up? That'll interrupt me whenever it's ready. We're just having some technical glitches on this side of the fence. Not to worry. One man was killed. 3 police officers were injured. Reading on with about this story in Melbourne that happened as a result of the hostage standoff in the Melbourne suburb of Brighton, which ended after the attacker, since named, 29-year-old, not going to name them, was shot dead by police. Again, people stop dragging me through the mud. I'm not naming these people. I'm not giving them the time of day on the air. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull reports Tuesday the attack, this is a couple of weeks ago, to be noted, was being treated as a terrorist incident and has shocked all Australians. Quote, "This terrorist attack by a known criminal was a man who was recently released on parole is shocking. Cowardly crime. It is a terrorist attack and it underlines the need for us to be consistently vigilant." Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says, and we've got the Prime Minister talking, but whether the Prime Minister wants to talk or not is another story entirely. Again, wow, our systems here have really just taken a nosedive. Apologies for that. We're going to try and... Jeepers, try and get everything back up and running again. Oh boy. Okay, so the terrorist attack is known criminal. Okay, we just said that. Turnbull said that the man had previously been known to police. Okay, so we are up and running again. Yay! There you go. So the police had linked to extremist organizations. Quote, we had a long record of violence. Very long record of violence. That's not me stuffing that up. That is literally the quote. He had been charged with terrorist offenses and was acquitted. He was known to have connections, at least in the past, with violent extremism. The attacker may have been baited to police.
Commissioner Mike Phelan. The events in Brighton and Melbourne last night, coming so soon after the attack in London, have shocked all Australians. This terrorist attack by a known criminal, a man who was only recently released on parole, is a shocking, cowardly crime. It is a terrorist attack, and it underlines the need for us to be constantly vigilant, never to be deterred, always defiant in the face of Islamist terrorism. Now, I want to say how much all Australians admire and thank the Victoria Police for their decisive and courageous intervention.
That is Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull giving a press conference with the Duty Commissioner Mike Plan from the Australian Federal Police. Is this other... That other video isn't working. Okay. HQ is telling me that nothing is working. Thank you, HQ. I already knew that nothing was working. Thank you for telling me that nothing was working as soon as I was told that nothing was working. Anyway, we'll push on. We'll push onwards and upwards. Thanks, HQ. After 2 hours, the man burst out of the apartment and began firing at police, hitting three of them. He was quickly gunned down by law enforcement authorities.
Simon Banks, I want to bring you in here. I think that's a really good point, that we need to draw a distinction between those two cases in terms of when we're talking about bail and when we're talking about parole. In the case of the Lindt Cafe, the recent coronial inquiry did identify some failings in terms of the prosecutor there, the DPP, and also the access to information they had from the Commonwealth as well. But in relation to this idea that Dan Andrews has put up today, it strikes me as extremely legally messy. In the case of this man's parole, we now understand from the Victorian government the parole board did know. They did know that this man had had links with this failed terror plot in relation to Holsworthy. But at the end of the day, he had never been charged with this or convicted of this terror offence. He had been charged and acquitted. He had not been convicted. So what is Dan Andrews on about?
Well, I actually think Dan Andrews is making a very sensible point. In fact, I think the Prime Minister's tried to make the other point. And I've got to say, to be honest, I think it's the Prime Minister who's made the more appalling suggestion in terms of some of his radio interviews today. What Dan Andrews has pointed out, I think, under both of these sets of circumstances, is that there is a nexus between, I guess, criminal activity and how that needs to be dealt with in the normal criminal justice system. But when there's a clear national security element to it, the people who ultimately have the best information, the best knowledge about what's going on, are in fact our national security agencies. It may well be, for example, that the Victorian police in a particular circumstance, and I'm certainly not suggesting it happened in this case, don't have the most up-to-date and relevant information, whereas, for example, ASIO may well have. So he's really saying that there needs to be coordination between the state and federal authorities about how that takes place. And I think, in fairness to both him and the Prime Minister...
But there's no terror watch list. How can you coordinate it via a terror watch list that doesn't exist? What is Dan Andrews talking about?
Well, for starters, as you quite rightly pointed out, Sam, there are 400 apparently people or thereabouts that our national security agencies are tracking. Now, they weren't tracking this particular individual, and I guess there's a question about why wasn't that the case. I think that's a pretty fair question to the Prime Minister, to ASIO, the AFP, and etc., because I think that is a relevant consideration in all of this. But at the end of the day, someone has to decide whether or not there's a national security issue here, and who is best placed to actually make that determination. Ultimately, that comes with the advice of ASIO, the AFP, and those agencies. They're the ones with the best information to inform those processes, and then decisions can be made in the individual cases.
That is a response to Malcolm Turnbull and what he said about parole. So he was on parole. So both Mr. Turnbull and the he was known to police and had been released on parole at the time of the attack. There is a whole range of offending going back many years. Most recently, he has done prison time in relation to reckless intending causing injury, Ashton said. Ultimately, he had been qualified on parole and was on parole at the time of this offence. His home in Melbourne, suburb of Roxburgh Park, where he lived with his mother, was being searched by police on Tuesday. Brighton is a suburban area in eastern Melbourne, known for its affluent residents and close proximity to beaches of Port Phillip Bay. Police were called to the scene after emergency calls reported loud bangs or explosions, Victoria Police Deputy Commissioner Andrew Crisp said Monday, which were later confirmed to be shotgun blasts. The police, the woman who had been held hostage, was released and was unharmed, it was said, while Crisp confirmed the three officers injuring were not life-threatening. So, okay, there is a number of conversations to be had here. I'm going to go back to... this press conference.
They responded swiftly, and they, as they always do, police and security services and the ADF.
When does... I want to know when... The commissioner speaks.
Are your concerns with the Victorian parole system just confined to terrorism, or did it?
Okay, so for those faint listeners, there was a question there about the parole system. So here's that question.
You mentioned Gilmar's case, but there's also there have been other cases as well. It is clear that this is a real issue where people with known records of violence, and including people with known terrorist connections, or at least connections with extremists, have been released on parole. So yes, this is an issue that we'll be raising and discussing with the premiers on Friday.
Okay, so that is the answer that was provided there in regards to this. This attack. Update, by the way. Apologies. We did have some technical difficulties, but we're back now. So there you go. That doesn't matter at all. I do apologize. We did have some technical difficulties and the Twitch stream did drop, but it should be alright. It'll be fine. Life goes on. Life continues as per is. But anyway, so that is a whole other story, because That is actually a conversation that isn't really brought up that much, is parole in regards to, were these people ever done jail time for crimes like this before, and why are they being let out off? I don't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of agree with the Prime Minister here. It's very, very we need to take a very harsh approach in terms of trying to find out if these people have committed these crimes before, and really trying to see why they're being let out and why, of course, they're going to commit these crimes again. We just need to find out why they're being released and try and prevent them from doing them again. And if, I don't know, trying to take the other side of the argument there is a little bit difficult, because it's like, okay, well, we don't have to set up a parole and then it's that. But of course, the fact that he was on parole is not the prime reason we should be looking into this, but it does bring in a different element to the conversation that we're not used to having in situations like this, and it is very interesting to bring up that point. As we continue here on the Genetic Live Show for Sunday, well, everyone's favorite segment is back. It is indeed the Trump Tracker Time. Oh, you know, that clip always sneaks up on me. But anyway, it's time to check the Trump thing with the staff. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, it's Dale Campbell here with you. It's 9:50. Hold on tight. This is the Generic Live Show. Push the button, push the button, push the button, push the button. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's Dale Campbell here with you. Thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to be here as per always. That button really just didn't want to work. And it's a sign, ladies and gentlemen, when your button doesn't want to work, it means it's time for... this. No, that's not it. That's definitely not it. This is it. That's the one. Hang on, can I? No, no. No, 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 no. Don't play that. No, don't play that at all. Can I? No, again, don't play that. I was trying to test something here. Okay, Trump Tracker time. Clearly, I really, really want to talk about the Trump Tracker. Of course, this comes to us from our friends over... this is the Washington Post Generic Live Show. Trump Tracker fun time stuff. It is day 140... No, it's 150! Wow, 150! 150 of the Trump administration... Do we have a... No, we don't have that. That's 150. Yeah, okay, Snorefest. Okay, 150 of the Trump administration. That means there's 1,000. I wish it was only 130 days left. 1,310 days left in his term. We are tracking the progress of 60 pledges he made during his campaign. Whether he not... he achieves these goals. This would come as a surprise to no one. The Trump Tracker actually has stalled out. The Trump Tracker has kind of hit a bit of a stalling point, because there really has not been anything happening in terms of Trump, except for what we're covering next hour, and that is legitimately all of the Trump goodness. I mean, greatest hits of Trump so far. What are the greatest hits of Trump? What do we say? Actually, what does he have left? Let's do what does he have left? Okay, let's not do that. He'd grow the economy? Yeah, sure, why not? Promise, not yet rated. Propose a constitutional amendment to impose term limits. Impose a ban on foreign lobbyists. Direct the Secretary of Commerce and U.S. Trade Representative to identify foreign trading abuses. Direct the Secretary of Commerce and U.S. Trade Representative to use each tool under the U.S. international law to end foreign trading abuses immediately. Due last year. Cancel every unconstitutional executive memorandum ordered by President Obama. Oh boy. Some of these have deadlines as back as the first day in office. End Common Core. That's my favorite one. But will Trump ever end Common Core? That is the big question. Actually, can we tackle that for a moment? I am very unknowledgeable of what Common Core is. What is Common Core? Let's pause on that. Now, I've been told is Common Core is a... Is it a state-by-state kind of deal? I've been told that it's kind of make sure that everyone is on that same sort of standard to make sure that transferring is easier. I that's what I've been told. So to abolish that, what would be in place of that? I don't understand what good could come out of ending a national standard. I mean, I don't know. See, this is what the problem's going to be. There's going to be all of these sitting here. There's going to be 32 not rates sitting here that, of course, are going to be used as broken. Well, they might actually do that. Give a middle-class family with two children a 35% pay cut. That might happen. I would believe that. I'd believe that, but there you go. Trump tracker. Here we go. 150 days. And it's still happening. As we continue here on the Jerick Live Show, the Jerick Live Show is still happening. We've still got another hour of broadcasting goodness for your ear holes. Well, the United Kingdom had an election. We're going to tell you all about it as we continue here on the Jerick Live Show for a Sunday. Thanks for joining us. It's Dale Campbell here with you. It's 10 o'clock.